This is Steve Kim. Welcome to the AC Podcast. On this podcast, we want to help you understand and speak the language of our culture and address questions being asked with intellectual honesty, gentleness, and respect. Hey, welcome back, everybody. This is Steve, believe it or not. Yes, I'm going through the annual tradition of getting laryngitis around this time of the year. Today, we're going to jump into the second part of my interview with Tim Stratton, the executive director of Free Thinking Ministries. We had so much to talk about last time that we had to cut off halfway, and then we're going to give you the second half that you didn't get to listen to last time. So last week, we talked about libertarian freedom and why that's important for morality, love, and rationality. And today, we're going to jump into Tim's main area of study at the moment, which is Molinism. Without further ado, here is Tim Stratton on Molinism. So let's move on to the second topic that I really wanted to discuss with you, and that is Molinism. Now, I know you've done a lot of work in that. Tell us a little bit about some of the misconceptions people have, especially our brothers and sisters in Christ that identify themselves as Arminians and Calvinists.
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, to provide a simple answer, Arminians often assert that Molinism is just as deterministic as Calvinists, or, you know, or is what I call exhaustive divine determinism, which many Calvinists hold to. And Calvinists often assert that Molinism is maybe equal to open theism or some flavor of Pelagianism, which is false. And Calvinists often contend that Molinism rejects God's sovereignty. Well, the funny thing is that all of these views argue against Molinism, typically. That is to say, the Calvinist typically thinks that Molinism is false, and the Arminian, who holds to only a simple foreknowledge view and rejects middle knowledge, then thinks Molinism is false. Now, Arminians can also hold to middle knowledge, and so can Calvinists, by the way. But many reject it for, you know, I think it's some weird reason. You know, and then you've got these open theists who are out there, too, that say that God does not know the future and does not know what would happen in other scenarios within his power to create. They're saying that God basically is not omniscient. That could be debated. But anyway, the interesting thing is that Calvinism and Arminianism, and this is important, Calvinism and Arminianism are both soteriological models, and Molinism is not a soteriological model. So for your listeners, the soteriological...
You were just getting into explaining what soteriology means, so go ahead.
Right. Yeah, that's a big word. Soteriology just means issues pertaining to salvation. So when I say a soteriological model, I mean a model of how one is saved or has salvation, goes to heaven, whatever you want to say. Right. All right, so to compare Molinism, so I'm saying Molinism is not a soteriological model, but Calvinism, at least five-point Calvinism, is. All right, so to compare Molinism to Calvinism, for example, is to compare apples to oranges, and that's a mistake. It's a fallacy, right? So when people want to say, "Hey, let's have a debate between Molinism and Calvinism," well, you're wrong right off the bat. I mean, you're making a mistake because it's not right to compare apples to oranges or to have the apple debate the orange. Now, Molinism, let me make this clear, although it's not a soteriological system, this is where it gets confusing. Although Molinism is not a soteriological model, it can be applied to issues pertaining to salvation. So those who do this are typically Arminians. All right. So there's lots of Arminians that are also Molinists. However, a Calvinist can also keep all 5 points of TULIP and still affirm what I refer to as mere Molinism without applying Molina's ideas to salvation issues. So Molinism is simply a model demonstrating how God can be completely sovereign and exhaustively predestine all things without causally determining all things. Let me say that again. Molinism is not a soteriology. It's simply a model demonstrating how God can be completely sovereign and exhaustively predestine all things without causally determining all things. Or you could even boil it down to some things if you wanted to. So this leaves room for human libertarian freedom and genuine responsibility. So with this in mind, that what I call the tool of Molinism is often applied to soteriological issues. But as I noted earlier, it does not have to be. So one can keep all 5 points of TULIP if they want to and still be a Molinist in other areas of life. In fact, those who are reformed and informed are starting to see that they can continue to hold to all 5 points of TULIP as traditionally defined, right? I don't have to start nuancing anything here. I do have some fun with that, but you don't have to, right? So one can hold to all 5 points of TULIP as historically defined while simultaneously holding the two essential pillars of what I refer to as mere Molinism.
The two pillars, by that you mean the libertarian freedom of human beings on the one hand and God's sovereignty on the other. Is that right?
Close. I said the two pillars that mere Molinism is boiled down to is this. One, humans possess limited libertarian freedom. Mm-hmm. And two, God possesses middle knowledge.
Oh, middle knowledge.
And if that's true, yeah. So if God possesses middle knowledge, then it shows how he can be sovereign over all things, including the libertarian free actions of humanity. Now, so Kirk McGregor does a nice job of tightening up these propositions. So you could say that mere Molinism entails, one, logically prior to God's decision to create the world, God knew everything that would happen in any possible scenario he could create. Now, if that's true, then God's got middle knowledge. Right? If one's going to affirm that logically prior to God's creative decree, God knew that everything that would happen in any possible scenario that he could create, then God's got to have middle knowledge. Unless one wants to argue that it's impossible for God to create a being in his image with the ability to choose between options both compatible with his nature. The second pillar or essential ingredient of mere Molinism is this. As beings created in the image of God, humans, like God, possess limited libertarian freedom. So it's vital to grasp that the two essentials of mere Molinism do not contradict any of the traditional definitions of the TULIP acronym. So I encourage people, I say, look at TULIP, right? I won't get into those now. People can Google that. But look at all of those as traditionally defined and compare them to God possesses middle knowledge and humans possess limited libertarian freedom. None of those contradict that. It might mean they don't have freedom in one aspect of life, but it does not mean they don't possess, that some humans don't possess some limited libertarian freedom some of the time, as I think even Calvin and Luther would agree. Definitely, I think Paul, the Apostle Paul, would agree. So I encourage people to go to my website, freethinkingministries.com, if they want to look more of this, three articles that I wrote down here. The one is called Are Mere Molinism and Moderate Calvinism the Same Thing? The second article is called Limited Libertarian Freedom and Traditional Compatibilism. What's the difference? And then finally, I have one called Molinism, Calvinism, Apples and Oranges. So those are three good articles to start with.
All right. So then the next question I have, actually, it's two questions put together, and you can answer it in whichever order you'd like. One is, this is the question that is raised when it comes to the issues of, you know, your freedom and God's sovereignty. So how can an omniscient being know the outcome of a free decision? Because Molinism seems to say that it's almost like God built our world, the actual world, with our free decisions built into it, so to speak. The second question is, I'm just curious how freedom-permitting circumstances work, because in one sense, it sounds like it's the circumstances that determine what it is that you're going to do, and so God knows what's going to happen. you could answer those questions. So two questions: how can an omniscient being know the outcome of a free decision? And secondly, how does freedom permitting circumstances work?
Let me take your second question first. How does freedom permitting circumstances work? Okay, so based on the definition I provided earlier, a freedom permitting circumstance simply refers to a situation in which a person possesses the ability to choose between multiple alternatives that are each compatible with the person's nature. So again, as an unregenerate sinner who has no ability to love Jesus, well, they're still in a freedom permitting circumstance if that person has the categorical ability, for example, to choose between robbing the bank or robbing the liquor store or robbing the gas station or staying home and right. watching the football game and merely fantasizing about robbing the bank, the liquor store, or the gas station. So they're still in a freedom permitting circumstance. They're just not free to do all things. To reiterate, a regenerate Christian is in a freedom-permitting circumstance when they find themselves in a scenario described by the Apostle Paul in 1 Corinthians 10:13, to fall into temptation or to take the way of escape promised by God. A woman, for example, is in a freedom-permitting circumstance when she finds herself in a scenario where she can choose to resist the flirtatious advances of a man or not to resist the man's advances. And a rational thinker finds himself in a freedom-permitting circumstance when he considers the steps he should take or not take while deciding what he should ultimately believe regarding certain issues. So these are all examples of freedom-permitting circumstances. So the circumstances do not determine what anybody does here, because indeed they are freedom-permitting. What the circumstances do is qualify the range of options from which one is free to choose from. Does that make sense?
Yep.
The circumstances can determine the range of options, but it doesn't determine mm-hmm. what one chooses between the range of options.
Right. That's a really helpful distinction there. Yeah.
Cool. Now, to answer your other question, how can an omniscient being, is that what it was? How can an omniscient being know the outcome?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So how can an omniscient being know the outcome of a free decision? Well, good question. I don't know. Okay, but I'll say I don't know how God knows this, but if God really is omniscient and knows the truth value to all propositions, then he simply knows how a free creature would freely choose, even if God never created the free creature in the first place.
Mm.
Okay, it just logically follows if we are going to affirm that God is a maximally great being and thus omniscient. So I don't know how God knows, but I know that if he's omniscient, then he knows it. Similarly, I do not know how God created the universe ex nihilo, out of nothing. Mm-hmm. But if God is truly omnipotent, then God can create the universe from nothing. So knowing how God created the universe is irrelevant. I know that he has the power to do it. Knowing how God knows how a free creature would freely choose, I don't need to know how. I just know that he does, if God is a maximally great being and mm-hmm. omniscient. So knowing how God does these things or knows these things is irrelevant. When we consider God's omni attributes, it becomes clear that God must possess middle knowledge, and that, you know, I'll say that some flavor of Molinism has got to be true. So think about it. I've got an article on my website that I call the MMA. Right? I used to actually fight in mixed martial arts. And
oh
MMA.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had a short professional stint as a fighter. I didn't do that good, but I was actually a pretty good coach. And I coached some guys that are in the UFC today and are top contenders in the UFC. At least one guy anyway, right now. Anyway, I enjoy MMA, but I have an argument called the MMA. It doesn't stand for mixed martial arts. It stands for mere Molinism argument. but it goes like this. Premise one: if God possesses the ability to choose between alternatives consistent with his nature, then God possesses libertarian freedom. Two, God possessed the ability to create or not create the universe and chose to create the universe. He's omnipotent. Right? Three, therefore, God possesses libertarian freedom. Four, God possesses the ability to create humans in his image or likeness. Five, therefore, God possesses the ability to create humans who possess limited libertarian freedom, even if he never does. Mm. That last part's important. Even if he never does, he's got the ability to create a free creature. Mm-hmm. Six, if God possesses perfect knowledge of how humans with libertarian freedom would choose if he creates them, and even if he never does create them, then God possesses middle knowledge. Because if he knows this, even if he never creates them, then this places this knowledge logically prior to his creative decree. Mm-hmm. Seven, since God is omniscient, he knows how humans who possess libertarian freedom would choose, even if he never creates them. Eight, therefore, God possesses middle knowledge, even if we don't know how he has it. That's a deductive conclusion. Therefore, God possesses middle knowledge. So that's basically the first half of the argument. I've got a few more premises I could give to show that mere Molinism is true. Would you like me to give those?
Yes, please.
Okay. All right, step nine. If libertarian freedom is not possessed by humans, then humans cannot rationally affirm knowledge claims. 10. Some humans can rationally affirm knowledge claims. 11. Therefore, some humans possess libertarian freedom. 12. Therefore, God, given his middle knowledge, knows how these humans who possess libertarian freedom would freely choose. 13. If God possesses middle knowledge and some humans possess libertarian freedom, then mere Molinism is true. 14. Therefore, given 8 and 11, mere Molinism is true. So I'll just rewind really quickly. For those who don't think libertarian freedom is required for rationality, I can substitute steps 9, 10, and 11, or simply 9 and 10, with 1 Corinthians 10:13, and say some humans possess the ability to choose to fall into temptation or to take the way of escape. And then argue that some humans possess libertarian freedom. I've got several premises that I can interchange with each other to make the conclusion. But ultimately, it gets us to the final conclusion. Therefore, given 8 and 11, mere Molinism is true. So that's a positive case where I argue for both libertarian freedom and God's middle knowledge, and therefore for mere Molinism. And one can hold this even if they are a five-point Calvinist.
All this syllogism, like, you're speaking my love language. I'm loving this. Moving on to my last couple of questions. Some people would argue that counterfactuals can't be grounded in reality because it hasn't happened yet. It has no truth value, some people would say. And if you don't have counterfactuals, you don't really have Molinism, do you? So I'm just wondering, how do you answer the grounding objection for counterfactuals?
You know, I've written a few articles on this topic, and several others have written even probably better objections against the grounding objection on the Freethinking Ministries website. So the grounding objection is just an objection saying that God can't know the truth value to counterfactuals because there's no grounding to these things. But yeah, I encourage people to go to the Freethinking Ministries website. Don't look at just my articles, but look at other articles written by guest contributors. John Lamonto has written good response and objection against the grounding objection. And so has another official contributor, a PhD philosopher from South Africa named Jacobus Erasmus. And well, it looks like Jacobus Erasmus, but his first name is actually pronounced Jacobus, is I think how they say it. Speaking of Dr. Erasmus, the two of us did provide a defeater to the grounding objection in Perichoresis 16:2, which is a theological journal article. So to make a long argument short, we showed that the advocate of the grounding objection typically asserts the following proposition. They would say this: a true contingent proposition is true in virtue of the existence, past existence, future existence, or non-existence of some concrete objects. And then Erasmus and I noted that This allows us to see that it's really facts or obtaining states of affairs and not the existence of some concrete objects that ground true contingent proposition. So consequently, if the grounding objector insists that CCFs or counterfactuals of creaturely freedom must be grounded or have truth makers, then the Molinist may simply respond that CCFs are grounded in counterfactual facts. And so this allows the Molinist to adjust the proposition offered by the grounding objector in the following manner. We can just say this: a true contingent proposition is true in virtue of the fact that some concrete objects exist or did exist or will exist or do not exist or would exist under specific conditions. So, you know, the Molinist's revised proposition seems just as reasonable as the grounding objector's. So for the grounding objector to work, one must show exactly why the Molinist's revised proposition is implausible, while also showing that their extremely similar proposition is plausible. So, you know, since to our knowledge, this challenge has not been met, we contend that we still have very good reason to believe that God is a maximally great being, has middle knowledge, and that some flavor of Molinism must be true. But with all of that said, my main goal, my tactic, if you will, is to first argue for limited libertarian freedom and to establish it. I think I've done that. I've given three reasons: morality, rationality, and true love. And I'll say this, I think in my dissertation, I'm establishing libertarian freedom three different ways: one, metaphysically; two, via systematic theology; and three, through biblical data. So I'm providing what I call a three-punch combo for freedom through metaphysics, theology, and biblical data. But from that point, after arguing for libertarian freedom, I seek to argue for God's middle knowledge. So if one can make a strong, positive, strong, deductive case for middle knowledge, then any argument raised against it that is not as strong as the arguments I've raised have problems right off the bat if my arguments are stronger. And like I said, I don't think the grounding objection is strong. I've said that I simply do not feel its force, and I think that's probably because of the positive arguments that we've offered for God's middle knowledge. They're strong and forceful. And moreover, I've argued that the only people who really have access to the grounding objection are open theists. And so Calvinists and Arminians, you should not touch it, especially Calvinists. The Calvinist who appeals to it in an attempt to defeat Molinism will wind up defeating his own Calvinism if he tries to wield that sword. And, you know, I've written an article called Dangerous Grounds, The Grounding Objection Versus Divine Determinism, and also an article called Is God's Knowledge Like a Box of Chocolates, referencing Forrest Gump. You know, I don't think we have a Forrest Gump kind of a God.
I think we could probably refer our people to the article. I'll be sure to put that up on the show notes, so listeners, make sure you go check that out. So let's then kind of wrap up. My last question is, and you touched on this again, since Molinism is not a soteriological model, so it's possible for Molinism to be compatible with Calvinism, and indeed you did say that it's actually, they are compatible. Is it also compatible, would you say, with Arminianism?
Yes, on both accounts. You know, Molinism, at least some flavor of Molinism, is compatible with both Arminianism and Calvinism. Again, you know, this is the case because both Calvinism and Arminianism are models, as you noted, pertaining to salvation, and Molinism is not a soteriological model. So it's quite easy for a strict Arminian to become a Molinist. In fact, many scholars actually think that Arminius was a Molinist. In fact, in my dissertation, I'm going through this, I can't think of his name right now off the top of my head. There's a scholar from Trinity in Chicago, and he's told me personally that he believes that Arminius was a Molinist. Calvinists often have a hard time seeing the compatibility of Millenism with Calvinism, though. And after reading Greg Kokel's book, Tactics, I decided to argue for mere Millenism by simply asking several questions. These tactics were affirmed after recently engaging in a conversation with a well-known Reformed theologian who's been adamant recently in his condemnation against Molinism. And in just really a few short minutes, this was about almost a year ago now, I won't name him. I'll let him speak for himself, but I'll just tell you this. In just a few short minutes, this ardent Calvinist and anti-Molinist wound up affirming mere Molinism after taking what I refer to as the Calvinist quiz, which were inspired by Greg Kokel's book, Tactics. So the question I asked were the following. I have six questions that I asked. I said, number one, did Satan possess the limited libertarian freedom to rebel or not rebel against God? This guy wound up affirming, yes, Satan did. And I would say that even after reading most of the reformers, they would agree with that too, that at least Satan had libertarian freedom. Then I asked this, did Adam and Eve possess the limited libertarian freedom to eat or not eat of the forbidden fruit? Again, I think that most reformers would say yes, at least Adam and Eve had this limited libertarian freedom. This scholar that I'm talking about, he affirmed this much as well. He goes, yeah, well, Adam had libertarian freedom, but he wrecked it for the rest of us. I'm like, okay. But do unregenerate sinners have limited libertarian freedom and an ability to choose between a range of sinful thoughts and actions? And he said, oh, well, yeah, of course. But they don't have the freedom to choose God or to be saved. And I'm like, that's not what I'm asking. I said, do unregenerate sinners have the ability to choose between robbing the bank and robbing the liquor store or other sins? And he goes, well, yeah. So the fourth question I asked this theologian, I said, do Christians possess the ability to either sin or to resist temptation and not sin in thought and action as per 1 Corinthians 10:13? And he said, well, yeah, Christians have that ability. I said, all right, well, then Christians at least have libertarian freedom, at least in a limited sense. I asked another question. I said, do Christians have the limited libertarian ability to, say, choose between reading either a red or a blue Bible? For example, I said, if John Piper chose to read a red Bible, could he have genuinely chosen otherwise and read the blue Bible? He didn't have a problem with that either and said, yeah, he could choose between the two options and both are within his nature. And especially I said, what if John Piper had an equal love for both red and blue? They were completely equal all the time. It's at least metaphysically possible. Finally, I said, do Christians possess the libertarian freedom to deliberate and rationally think things through to reach conclusions like Calvinism is a better explanation than Molinism, or Molinism is the inference to the best explanation? Now, this guy answered yes to all these questions. And then our conversation went like this. I said, so with this quiz in mind, do you believe creatures possess limited libertarian free will, at least in some issues not pertaining to salvation? And he said, yes. He says, I do believe that humans have limited libertarian free will, just not when it comes to salvation. I said, great. I said, now let's bracket soteriological issues for a moment. Since you affirm that some humans possess libertarian free will, at least some of the time, how would you answer the following? When did God know how humans would freely choose? Did God gain this knowledge, or has God always possessed this knowledge without beginning? I also asked, how is God sovereign over these libertarian free choices? And this Calvinist said, well, God is necessarily omniscient. He always knows all things perfectly. I said, exactly. I said, I agree 100%. And then I said, so God knew how you would freely choose in these circumstances not related to salvation, logically prior to his creative decree. And he said, yes, he does affirm that God knew that. And I said, congratulations, you're a Molinist. And he goes, well, how did you reach that conclusion? And I said, well, Molinism is not necessarily a soteriological view. It simply offers a model as to how some human thoughts and actions can be free in a libertarian sense, so responsibility entails, and also how God can be sovereign over these free thoughts and actions by choosing to create a world in which he knew how people would freely choose. And I pointed out that he just affirmed the two essential pillars of mere Molinism, again, which one, humans at least occasionally possess libertarian free will, and two, God possesses middle knowledge, which is knowledge of how humans would freely choose logically prior to his creative decree. And check this out. This theologian, he paused for a few moments. I remember he looked down at his shoes for what seemed to be an eternity, but I'm sure it was just a few seconds. Then he responded and said, "Well, if that's what it means to be a Molinist, then I guess I'm a Molinist." And I said, "I already knew you were." So people can go on, and I've got this conversation documented on the website if they'd like to read through that.
Yeah, that's fascinating. It's time to wrap up. Thank you so much for joining us and giving us a good chunk of your time. Would you remind our listeners where we can learn more about you and your work?
Well, freethinkingministries.com is the website. I encourage people to go there. You can sign up for every article or video or sermon that I give. You can sign up to have it all emailed directly to you. Also, I encourage people to go and subscribe to our podcast. It's called the Free Thinking Podcast. You can have those sent to your smartphone. We're on iTunes and a whole bunch of other things. So sign up for the podcast on Facebook. We have a Free Thinking Ministries Facebook group. That's open to anybody as long as you're a Christian. So we can have theological debates there if you'd like. We also have the Free Thinking Podcast Facebook group. It's a closed group, but you can apply to be in it. And we have a lot of fun there. The primary source where you're going to get my stuff is from freethinkingministries.com. That's freethinkingministries.com.
Great. Well, thank you again for coming on to the show and taking time out of your busy schedule to talk to us about these issues. Thank you so much.
Well, I'm honored. Thank you for the invitation, and let's do it again sometime.
Yeah, for sure. Listeners, thank you so much for joining us. Whether you agree with everything Tim said or not, I hope Tim gave you lots to chew on. I'm sure he did. That was a lot of heavy stuff in there too. So just take your time, carefully think through what Tim has offered to you, and I hope that's helpful to you in your journey with Christ. Thank you for joining us. The Apologetics Canada podcast has been a ministry of Apologetics Canada, and we'll see you next week with more stuff to think about. Ciao for now.